Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 87 of Classic Leap. My name is Scott, and I'll be hosting this week. I have Vogue Nasty and Gooch joining us. What's going on, guys?
Get a silk bag from the graveyard duck to live longer.
What?
Is that from the Gaming Moments? What is that from?
That's from Simon's Quest.
It's like, you sounded all emo. It's like you hate emo stuff. It's like, what happened to Dustin? Good stuff. Well, clearly, Dustin, you're in a zany mood tonight. Zany, that's an awful word. Gooch, what's going on with you today?
I was going to say I was feeling zany, but screw that.
Oh, yeah. Can't believe I said zany. It's like calling, that's like saying sharp. You know, you look sharp today. It's like I must have been hanging out with my grandma recently or something. I don't know. But, guys, we are here with episode 87, and we're going to talk about a lot of different stuff on the podcast. Dustin and I have been doing some beta stuff with Ghost Recon and Diablo. I did some actual game hunting, and Gooch, you've also been up to, well, just trying to keep your head above water at work. Actually, you haven't been doing much gaming, have you?
Not a whole lot. I did make time to play some Mass Effect 3, which we'll talk about, but that's really about it. I mean, yeah, I've just been slammed.
That's all right. It's a good time to be really busy at work since there's not a ton going on gaming-wise, so it's kind of working out well for you. But I guess before we get the episode started with some news, we just want to remind everybody to check out DoghouseSystems.com. The promo code CLEAT will give you $25 in Jinx Gold. The same promo code will get you 20% off at j2games.com and at epicvesselgames.com. You can get Potionmaster for $2. Also, want to let everybody know to check us out at Gaming 2.0. That's g2po.com. And guys, we do have a quick announcement that I'm pretty excited to make, and it has to deal with our intro song. We have a new tune that I think we'll be playing for a while. It's from Ben Landis. You guys heard it for the first time a couple of episodes ago. It's a song called Through the Forest, and it's from his album Adventures in Pixels. And I want to encourage everyone to check out the album because it's really unique. What Ben did was for each track, he has a particular comic associated with that track, and the 20 or so tracks in the album tell a complete story of a hero going and rescuing his girl. So it's cool. I don't know. It without it looking like a very childish thing, it reminded me of being a kid again. I don't know. It was something that I didn't expect to enjoy the PDF as much as I did. I was actually really shocked. I know that Dustin and Gooch, you guys haven't checked out the PDF yet. I'm going to send you guys a copy after the show, but just want to encourage everybody to check out the album Adventures in Pixels, especially if you like the song Through the Forest. This is one of my favorite tracks on the album, and our good friend Bill Bolden from Lore by Spruik, he's a big fan of the album too, so I just want to thank Ben very much and encourage everyone to check that out. We'll have links in all the show notes that include this as the song. So if you ever want to check out Adventures in Pixels or the track, you'll be able to do that. So, Ben, thank you very much. We're really excited. I think it fits really well. I know you guys liked the song a lot when I played it a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Good deal. Well, as far as news this week, there really wasn't a ton that caught my eye. There was probably a decent bit out there, but I know before we started recording, you guys had a hard time coming up with stuff to talk about also. But the one thing that jumped out to me a little bit as far as the rumor mill is concerned is that the new Super Mario Bros. 2 sequel seems to be confirmed for the 3DS, which is fantastic. Did either of you guys play the DS version of New Super Mario Brothers?
I played the Wii.
You just played the Wii version?
Yeah.
Gooch?
Yeah, it was one of the few games I had when I had, like, my three Nintendo DSs.
What did you think of it?
It was really, really good.
Yeah.
I was actually surprised how much I enjoyed the mini games almost as much as the game itself.
Like which one? Like which ones?
I don't remember.
I don't remember. I couldn't think of any mini games. I wanted to go along with you, and I'm like, I can't think of any.
I remember I played a lot. There was something about shooting maybe turtle shells or shooting Marios up in the sky. There was a bunch of neat ones. I just remember it was really kind of cool and used the touchscreen in a bunch of interesting ways.
Yeah. I remember really enjoying it. I played through it once, and I loved it. So I'm excited about a sequel. Do you guys think that they'll do any sort of co-op? Like online co-op?
If they were smart.
That means well, no.
That wasn't the question. it just means maybe.
Yeah.
Well, It works really well with Mario Kart 7. So I would think that they'd be able to have some sort of a pairing system or like buddy code invite system or something like that. So I don't know. Keep an eye out for that. Oh, I am excited though for, this isn't on the notes, but the Mario Tennis game for the 3DS is getting really good reviews, and I really, really like tennis games. So I'm really excited about that. I don't know. Are either of you guys looking forward to that at all?
I didn't know it existed.
No.
Same.
Crap. Well, I will be looking to the interwebs to find co-op matches.
I'll keep an eye out for you, though.
Do it. Just get it. It's tennis. Mario Tennis. Did you guys play it on 64?
No.
Back in the day? No? Oh, man.
I played Virtua Tennis on the Dreamcast.
Oh, my. That's the best tennis game that's ever been made. Carlos Moya. It was so hard to beat. And then King, the dude in the white pants at the end. Yeah, he was tough as hell to unlock. My roommate and I were able to do it my sophomore year. It was sweet. I'm really looking forward to it, and the reviews have been good, or the initial impressions, I guess, people have been giving have been good, so I think that comes out really soon, maybe just in a week or two, I don't know, but I'll be getting that shortly after it comes out. And Gooch, you noticed some Batman news, right?
Yeah, I don't remember when, maybe yesterday, day before, all the days run together when you're working as much as I am.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a Game of the Year edition of Arkham City coming out, which is no surprise to anyone, I'm sure. But the big thing, though, is that packed in this will be, you know, all the DLC, the Catwoman stuff, et cetera, and a new DLC pack that continues the story after the game ends. I'm not going to spoil the ending, but just to say that it was sort of significant. I mean, not polarizing, but very unexpected.
We spoiled it on the show before.
Oh, so can I go ahead and spoil it now?
No, I was like shocked that there was a spoiler. I was like, oh, that was a...
Yeah.
Yeah, Joker dies.
Okay, yeah. He dies. But then this DLC is Harley's Revenge. So who knows, I mean, what's going to happen after this. But it's cool, and I can't wait to play it.
I can't believe that's... Oh, that was so weird to me. I thought the boss died. So it didn't ring a bell to me at all that Joker died. It didn't...
Yeah, how could you not remember that? We were talking about it, and it just didn't stick out, I guess.
Not in the slightest bit. It was like, yeah, the boss died. Yeah, he's dead. It's the end of the game. I feel so dumb about being like that, too.
Well,
that
no, was, no.
That made one of the top 100 gaming moments of all time, the list that we're going to talk about here in a little bit, and it didn't even, it totally went over my head. I wonder how much of that game I totally missed, and I actually still enjoyed it. I wonder how much I could have enjoyed it. I don't know.
You're just not hardcore, man.
I'm not hardcore. I need to pay attention when I'm playing games. Dustin, that's probably why I can't orient myself at all in 3D games, why I'm constantly lost. I lack the ability to focus on what's in my environment in the game. Oh, well, as people have commented on the Ghost Recon video, one guy's like, dude, you can't zoom in this game? It's like, no, it's just, I'm really bad. I didn't zoom.
Well, it's not that intuitive the way they set up the controls, because you kind of have a zoomed in reticle when you hit the left trigger, and you have to actually click in the right thumbstick to zoom down, and it's toggle. It's not hold down, of course. So
yeah, but
it can get you killed if you use it in the wrong circumstance.
Yeah, but I mean, but I was aware of that mechanic. And I just flat out wasn't zooming in. Like, he was totally right to call me out. I remember at one point, when we weren't recording anything, I was telling you, like, oh crap, I should be zooming. Yeah.
People have been pretty civil.
They have been very nice. So we'll talk about that. No, let's talk about it now. So, Ghost Recon Beta, was that open? That was a closed beta just this last weekend, or is that?
I think it's going until like May 9th, so.
Oh, okay, so it's still going. Yeah. But there's lots of ways to get it, right? There's like four different ways you can, if you pre-order it through GameStop, you get it, and there's lots of different ways that you can get the beta code.
If you bought Splinter Cell Conviction, you can get it that way.
If you had the old Ghost Recon, the beta is an option in the menu.
PlayStation Plus members can play it right now.
Oh yeah, that was the other one. So yeah, people have been pretty nice about my bad gameplay. I think they were just happy to see some actual just gameplay footage.
Yeah.
Just to kind of see what it looked like, and we had what, like 16 or 17 minutes maybe. So
yeah.
There was a decent look at an entire battle, and luckily we were on different teams. Josh, we didn't even know that we were on different teams, though, and we still didn't get flamed that bad.
Yeah.
So, but what are some other things about the Ghost Recon beta that stood out to you a little bit?
Just some of the points that you'll see on the box, like you can shoot at people who are behind cover, and it will suppress them, it'll disorient them, it'll make it really difficult for them to pop out from behind cover, and it makes them easier to flank. You can
see that's a really nice deep game mechanic that I don't think I would have really caught on unless I was playing with you.
Yeah,
because like I'm always disoriented, so I just would have assumed like, oh yeah, like whatever.
There's a cover swap system, so you can kind of, it's like the little what they call it, the roadie run from Gears of War, except it's extremely fast and it zips you there like, you know, automatically. You're not really in control of your character.
Yeah,
but you move like super super fast.
But it works really really well. It feels good in the game. The way that it's described, it almost sounds like you're just picturing like these Marines like just darting across the battlefield, like getting into cover points, and it's not like that. I thought it was fun, and I think that it's going to be a pretty successful game. Gears of War 3 is really really big right now, still with the multiplayer, isn't it?
I would think so, yeah.
And this has you've played some Gears, so out of these like third person controls, just gameplay or shooter-wise, how do you say it stacks up, maybe?
I would say it's above average, just because of the different things that you can do with being in the not-too-distant future of Tom Clancy's universe. You have the option to stun characters and then hack them, and if you hack the opposing team, then you will see your entire team will see the entire placement of the other team, regardless of whether they're behind cover or not.
Yeah, and it almost looks like an infrared, but they usually show up in like blue or red icons, but it gives you like a infrared. It's awesome.
The guns are highly lethal. The grenades have almost no fuse time. Like as soon as they get toward, like, they'll explode most of the times before they even hit the ground. And it's very different from a Call of Duty, where you can shoot a guy for like 5 minutes and he doesn't die, but then he turns around and kills you. Or Halo, that happens a lot in Halo.
Yeah.
It feels very tactically oriented.
Yeah, and I got better. I played it for the hour with you, and I got better. And that's what makes me think that I think this is going to be a successful game. I really do. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, a blockbuster, like monumental, huge thing. Were any of the Kinect features in the beta? I didn't even look.
I don't think so.
But this is the game that they did the Kinect demo, right? Where they did like voice swapping of like building a gun and like kind of taking stuff apart, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So cool. Well, sweet. Yeah, I mean, if you have an opportunity to check out the beta, definitely do it. We had a little trouble at first getting a game, but I think that their servers are running pretty good because after an initial issue, we didn't have any more, right? Am I remembering that right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, after we got in, it was smooth sailing from that point.
Do you think you might get the game?
I usually pick up the Tom Clancy games. I enjoy them. I'm excited to see what the single-player campaign is going to be like.
I think the campaign will be really cool.
Yeah.
If it's not too long, I might Redbox it. Something like that. So, sweet, man. Well, you also have some stuff about Pop Fiction. There's a new one?
Yeah, there's a new one up. It's from Yoshi Story. But it's not as good as the usual ones. I don't know. It seems like maybe they rushed it out or something.
What's the myth that they're busting in Yoshi's Story?
Whether or not you can rescue the purple Yoshi in Yoshi's Story. There's a purple Yoshi in the beginning of the game, like when you turn it on. But throughout the game, you rescue Yoshis, and you never rescue a purple one. So there's like myths that you have to collect every coin in the game and like ridiculous stuff like that.
What's the end result?
Well, you had to go and watch. I don't want to spoil
it. Oh, jeez. All right. That actually is like a fantastic show. I love it.
Yeah.
Badass. Well, what else have you been up to gaming-wise this week?
I think that's pretty much it.
Cool.
It's the end of the semester, so.
Ah.
Yeah.
Real life. At least we got to play a little Ghost Recon. That was cool.
Yeah.
It was better than nothing, so. Sweet. Well, speaking of betas, I did play the Diablo 3 beta this weekend, and I pre-ordered Diablo 3 today, so it is good. It wasn't perfect. The one thing about it is it was really, really simple, and I loved it. All I did was use my mouse. Like, that's so awesome. And the keyboard, you know, it was easy to just rest my hand on the keys right away or whatever. But it was a really simple game, really satisfying gameplay. I'm excited. And just about any nerd friend that I have, even if anybody that plays games that, I don't know, they seem to be getting this game. There are so many people that I work with that are getting Diablo 3 that I didn't even know were into video games at all.
Wow.
So, I mean, between you guys, I mean, Tony was like, yeah, if you're getting Diablo 3, I'm going to get it. I'm like, what? Really? Awesome. And then I was talking with my buddy Eric at work, and he was the one that, you guys remember me talking about the StarCraft clan, like the RH Gaming? And they were going to build a Diablo 3 leaderboard community between like clans and friends and stuff.
I think I remember that.
It was a couple months ago almost now. Gosh, man, these things fly. So, I was talking with him about it, and he is into RTS games a lot, and he knows a lot about MMOs, but he's not so much into them. But I was telling him about Josh, just being more of like a PC gamer and really knowing that stuff real well. And he asked if Josh was going to be getting Diablo 3. And I'm like, well, you know, he's more of an MMO guy. So I'm not sure actually if he is or not. And he started asking me about Project Titan stuff. And I'm like, as a matter of fact, Gooch has mentioned Project Titan. So through all of that, then today I find out, I'm like, so Gooch, I think I'm going to get Diablo 3. And you're like, oh, I'm getting it. Hell yeah. And I'm like, okay. Like, obviously. So everybody I'm talking to is getting Diablo 3. And I'm getting it because I'm going to play games with my friends. And it's going to be awesome. Dustin, have you put any thought into getting it? Or did you play any of the old Diablos?
I played a lot of the first one and a little of the second one. But I played them like a couple of years ago. I didn't play them when they first came out.
Oh, okay.
But I loved the first one, and I didn't get into the second one very much, but I played the first one so much, and when I tried to hop into the second one, I kind of burned myself out.
Gotcha.
So,
I kind of reminds me a little of the text I got from my brother today. Well, because it pissed me off when we were, I was in high school when he was playing a lot of Diablo 2 and he was on the computer a lot. And this was the times when we had dial up internet and one computer per family kind of stuff. And every time he would play Diablo for a long time, it would, like, we'd have like massive failure with our computer and it would have to go in like to the repair shop. And so I would always blame this stupid Diablo game. And so I thought he'd get a big kick out of it. Like, dude, I'm getting Diablo 3 after I like made you feel like the worst person in the world for getting it. And all his response back to me, and I ended my text with, I wish you had more time to play it. He owns his own business. He's busy as hell. So his response was not, I wish I could play it too, or yeah, that'd be great if I could play it, was, I already gave Diablo 2 3 months of my life. That's all he said back. Like, okay. But maybe down the road he'll want to play it. But yeah, Diablo 3 has me really excited. And I wonder if this style of co-op might be a mini revolution in games where there will be a really neat crossover where people will maybe have a little bit more of a gray area between someone that plays computer games being viewed as an MMO player. Maybe it'll have a little bit more of a crossover interest. I think one of the biggest reasons that I'm more interested in PC games, not because I've got the doghouse rig so I can actually play PC games, but it's in my living room. So I have my PC hooked up to my TV, so I think having gaming in the living room has helped with that a lot. I don't know if I would be as excited if I would still have to kind of, you know, hunch over my desk and get into it that way. I really like gaming on my couch. Do you guys think there might be anything to that? The idea of PC games being available maybe in the living room is kind of ushering in like a brand new like revolution in gaming?
I think it's like having a next generation console right now. That's really what it is to me.
I feel like it's more like having like the next generation like infrastructure, like getting us used to like buying games digitally and getting us used to like, now we like wait, now we don't buy games right away because we wait for them to drop on Steam or whatever and pick it up right away. So, I mean, it's helping us get used to that. Or at least for me anyways.
Gooch never sits down when he plays.
Oh, that's right.
I can't.
I'm not getting used to it. That's great.
I line my chair with thumbtacks. If I dare put my ass in that thing, I will die. they're poison tipped.
Yeah.
Thumbtacks.
Oh, fantastic. Now, what you're going to end up doing is like dropping poison thumbtacks on the ground. And you're like, oh, I got to sit down. It's too safe too unsafe to walk around my apartment. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm pretty into having a PC out in the living room to game on. It's pretty fun. So, yeah, dude, it does feel like having a next generation console.
On a side note, the live stream looked fantastic.
Oh yeah, I did a live stream of it. That was fun, dude. That Dino Broadcaster stuff you found is amazing.
Yeah. I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah. So, but it looked good on your end, right?
Yeah, the frame rate was perfect. It blew up really well. Yeah.
That's cool. We'll have to try to do that as often as we can. It's way easier with a PC game because you can play it in like a windowed version or windowed mode.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it like way easier. You don't have to have some like preview interface. It still looks good when you go through like the ArcSoft software that you did for the streaming of like 360 or PS3 games.
Mm-hmm.
But it's way nicer when it's already on your PC like that, you know?
Yeah.
So, dude, that's good to hear. Even though people have not shown us really any interest in live streaming, damn it, we're going to stream. What'd you say?
Whatsoever. They haven't shown any interest whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, I put up a link, like, hey, I'm going to stream Diablo, and I saw it was shared. And so I was like, yes! I clicked and it was you that shared it.
So, yep.
Oh, well. Well, you guys missed out. Pay attention to our Facebook. That's as erratic as I can get.
Twitch.tv/classic_league.
_league, yep. So, oh well. Like it records stuff. Can't you go back and like rewatch streams?
Yes.
That's cool. So if you're interested in what the Diablo 3 beta looks like, you can watch me play through, gosh, I don't know, maybe 90% of the beta. As far as like the story mode, you can continue on and keep grinding them up, level up, but it's really boring. There's nothing to it. So, cool. Well, I picked up some really, really cool retro stuff this week. Gamers having a sale right now. It's their, third or fourth year anniversary. So all their retro games are half off. So I picked up, Gunstar Heroes, Boxed and Complete. Madden 92 boxed, which is fantastic. That's my favorite Madden game. My brother has the copy I grew up with. And Complete and Boxed Cool Spot, which I was really looking for. So I paid a couple bucks for Madden, a couple bucks for Cool Spot, which is great. Then I also got a really good condition Final Fantasy manual that came with the actual game. I have a nice Final Fantasy cart, so getting the manual. They have a really big tub of manuals. So I've gotten addicted to sifting through. I've got a box of like an old Super Nintendo box, a Mario All-Stars Player's Choice box, and I'm just filling it up with game manuals right now. Like I've got a Super Nintendo like system manual, Super Mario World, Mario Kart, A Link to the Past, and then I just picked up Yoshi's Island. Dustin, and I should have looked in there for the, they probably have the answer to Pop Fiction in the manual. I got Donkey Kong Country 2, and then the Final Fantasy one that I just mentioned. But then aside from those games, and I also picked up Little Mermaid. So I got all of that for $20. So I was really happy, especially Gunstar Heroes. Boxed with a manual, I'd pay $15 for that anyway, so to kind of get the rest of that for, you know, $5 was a steal. So I was real happy with that. And I started, the book Ready Player One. Have I talked about this with you on the show before, Ready Player One? Or have I mentioned the book much to you?
Maybe. It sounds familiar.
I know that I've briefly mentioned it, but Goochman, you've got me motivated. It's time for me to start getting back into shape too. So I got Ready Player One as an MP3 and started it today. It's amazing. I'm really into the book so far. I've heard really good things about it. I've got a buddy at work that he reads a ton, and he had a long drive coming up going to a conference in New York. So one of the things that he got was Ready Player One because I just asked him. I'm like, hey, you read a lot. Have you read Ready Player One? He said no, but he ended up trying it because I suggested it and said it was great. I listened to the All Gen Gamers podcast that had Ernie Klein on. He's the author of the book, and that was a really, really good interview. So the first 30 minutes of the book are just amazing. Will Wheaton does a fantastic job narrating it, and it's cool. I think you guys will really appreciate this. When I get done with the workout, I have to write down where I am in the MP3 and like a little note of what they were talking about so I can get back to the right spot. So, yeah, you guys definitely need to get it. I purchased a hard copy of the book. It's got a really neat cover, so I think it'll just be kind of a cool display piece. I don't think I'll actually read it, though. Will Wheaton does an amazing job narrating it. I'm excited. So check it out, guys. All right. Now I came across an article today on Dig, and it's from NintendoEverything.com. It has the game master, whoever the game master is at Everything Nintendo, came out with a list of the top 250 greatest gaming moments. So, the first thing I guess I'd want to do, you guys have looked through this list. What are some of the 250 things that are, jumping out to you as really cool things from, gaming moments? One that jumped out to me was Madden 92. The ambulance coming onto the field. And like, what it does is when you have a player injured in Madden 92, an ambulance comes out onto the field to rescue the player, and if there's any players in the way, they get just ran over. So that stood out to me. Come on. I know that there's some stuff that stood out to you guys.
In Metal Gear Solid 4, when you come back to Shadow Moses Island.
You know, why is that so big? Help me with that. I don't care that it's spoilers for me. This is like Metal Gear 2, right? This is an old game, right?
It's actually, no, Metal Gear Solid 4 was for PS3. It came out in 09, off the top of my head. And Shadow Moses Island is where Metal Gear Solid on the PlayStation 1 took place, which was released in 97, off the top of my head. No, 98. And as in the PS1 version, in the original, when you're swimming in, it's playing this music, and it's really distinctive. It's in like a, is it Norwegian? Anyway, it's a really distinctive song, and when you get back to Alaska in Metal Gear Solid 4, there's no real music, but as you come up this path that leads to the opening area, the music just kind of suddenly creeps in, and it's really nostalgic. It's really awesome.
That's cool.
And it's like a complete reimagining of the old area, but in the completely, you know, high res, awesome looking graphics.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. saved a cough there. There's a slight hint of that a little bit with Skyward Sword. Some like old nostalgia coming in at some pretty key times.
How it's the same game?
Yes.
Over again?
Yes. It's the exact same game over again. But that's why we love it. That's the breaking moment number one. But one of what I thought was really neat about this list was the number one moment. Some of the top other moments are number four is Sonic and Knuckles having that cart be able to take the Sonic 2 and 3 carts and use Sonic or Knuckles in those games. I heard another podcast referred to it as the first DLC. They're like, Sega was just releasing the first DLC.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was pretty cool. But they have as the number one moment as Mario 64 exploring the castle. That was a holy crap moment. That was unbelievable. The castle, stating in the castle, I view it as the field and then inside of the castle actually racing that penguin. Or not in the castle, in the first like little snow area down the chimney. But, yeah, that blew me away. I guess, Josh, what were some of, what was one of yours?
Well, the one that stood out to me when I was going through the list the most was the opening to the original Half-Life, where you're on the train going to work.
I
took it for granted at the time. I was just like, man, this is taking forever. But just in the context of how the game tells the story and how it set it all up, as, you know, being a normal day where just everything goes crazy, it was fantastic and really ingenious. And a lot of games have copied that sort of, like, slow introduction, you know, very similar to the original Half-Life. I don't know. Maybe I'm a nerd. I'm, you know.
No, I didn't play it. I can't help you out. I have no idea. There's like some cool spoiler ones on here. There's some things that you don't necessarily want to read, but they're usually older games. Another one, Yoshi. That was pretty big.
Yeah.
Now, they've got Batman Arkham Asylum. The Scarecrow crashes your machine. Again. Okay, that was just something a boss did to me. Like, I don't understand why that was a big moment in gaming. I feel like I really can't appreciate the Batman series because I don't really know anything about it.
You're a poser.
I know, right? That's how I feel. Because I don't know, I really loved both of those games, and the more I hear about them, the more I find out that I have no idea. So. Yeah, they've got on here, Pong, your first goal. That's ranked kind of high. That's a little cheeky. I don't know.
Do you guys have any personal ones?
Yeah, a big one for me was actually beating Contra with no code. I did that in college. I don't know if I told you, but my the first thing I ever bought online was Contra on the NES. I remember being like real frustrated because Funko Land closed down and all that. And yeah, I got it for $10 from half.com. I think it was half.com. Pretty sure it was. And yeah, since then I've been buying tons of crap online. It went really well, but I don't know. I guess maybe that. I think more than Mario's Castle, like 64 wise, when Ocarina of Time came out, it fell over Christmas break and a blizzard. So I missed 3 weeks of school straight.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, that in itself was just like nuts. So, yeah, those are some two personal ones for me, like beating Contra and then having the world work out that way where I get to play Zelda for 3 weeks because I can't get, like there were days where it was illegal to go outside. So you just have to stay in and play video games. It was really cool. But I was really lucky. There was a bunch of kids that just were my age in the neighborhood that I grew up in. So when we were allowed outside, but like cars weren't allowed on the road, we could still all get together and go outside. But yeah, playing Zelda was sweet. Yeah. What about you, Gooch? Any personal ones stand out for you?
I remember when DB and myself stayed up really, really late to beat the original Resident Evil and firing the rocket launcher at the Tyrant. You know, to complete that battle and finish the game. Super epic.
Nice. Again, context, I'm having to go on. I didn't play that game either. I'm the worst video game podcast host. I'm like, oh. It allows me to ask questions, but I have no clue what you're ever talking about. What else? Any other good DB stories?
Well, there was this time at band camp. Not really. I don't know. Me and him stayed up to play a lot of games together, but that was probably the biggest one I remember. And I remember personally Final Fantasy VII when Ares died and like beating the original Lunar on Sega CD. You know, there's a lot of like big role-playing game accomplishments as a kid that I had because, you know, it just felt like I had finished something epic. Grander than grand.
Yeah, well, you did.
No, I just had a lot of free time.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
So I had a recently, Portal 2 gave me that kind of a holy crap wow moment. Just the gameplay and stuff. What about you, Dustin? Do you have any?
Off the top of my head, I played Super Mario 64 on a Demo 64 in a Sears here in North Carolina, and it blew my mind.
Yeah.
It, like, when, the first time I hopped on the Koopa that shows up after you beat Koopa the Quick in Ba-Bomb World, and you get to, like, skate on his shell, like a skateboard. Oh, man. Mind blown. It was awesome. And, on a, like a personal achievement level, my first Extra Life tournament, marathon, I beat Castlevania 1, 3, 4, and Ninja Gaiden within a 24-hour period.
That's amazing. You should get, we need to save up, money to get you a plaque. Great. Oh, another one that jumped out to me, the Sonic the Hedgehog one, when you just turn it on, it says Sega. Just the Sega. That will resonate with me. But I still can taste Watermelon Jolly Rancher when I hear that, like, tone. It's nuts. So, Yeah, Dustin, man, definitely playing Portal 2 with you was a wow kind of holy crap moment. Because I don't know, like there's something about Portal, like you feel really lost. And as you start to understand the game mechanics, it gets more and more fun to keep learning. And like, while I'm figuring out like how to play the game, you're over there figuring out the puzzle. So like, there's times where like, I'm just following you to the next room, not really sure how you figure it out, but okay, we're kind of moving on. And then like, as the puzzles got harder and it became apparent that I had to start helping, all the little like rooms and puzzles began to feel a lot smaller and more manageable and like more fun to beat. And I don't know, like for the first time with the game, I felt like almost like I truly had like goggles on where I really could look anywhere I wanted as fast as I wanted in the way that I wanted. I don't know. It was really, really cool. I don't know if you guys had ever had maybe that kind of a jump since you guys had always been in PC games. But for me, I hadn't really felt that engrossed in a game before. It was really, really neat.
I think the Eureka moments really lend to that.
Yeah.
You spend, however, like the longer you spend trying to figure something out, it makes the, oh, that's how you do it, even better.
It really does, and I'm doing it. You know, having a friend to go through that with makes it that much better. So,
yeah.
I'm hoping that, you know, of course you're not going to have the satisfaction of the Eureka moment in Diablo 3 that you do have in Portal 2, but I'm hoping that sense of hell yeah, we did that. That I get that a lot in Diablo 3.
Yeah.
Actually, if I only get it a little bit, just a few times, I'll get my money's worth. So. I'm just hoping that their auction house is a success so that I won't have to pay anything per month to play. Because as soon as I have to pay per month, I'll only play for about 2 months and then I'll just have to be done. So, well, cool, guys. Are there any other, like, holy crap moments that that you personally had or that jump out on the list?
Pretty much, off the top of my, I just thought of something. Pretty much any time that I made progress in a Nintendo game.
some of them were, the level 6 maybe in Ninja Turtles arcade game. It's kind of like in a dojo almost with like a lot of bamboo.
Oh yeah.
Like white tigers. I had that with that level. That like a holy crap sense of accomplishment. You know, one that I didn't have as a kid that I found out as an adult was the Metroid Samus thing, that she was a girl.
Yeah, that didn't surprise me as much. I don't know.
I didn't play Metroid. I never had. And I was watching out probably like a top 10 like video game moments thing, and they were like, Samus's Metroid is a girl. And that was pretty cool. I could see why that was a big deal back then.
Yeah,
but I totally missed that one. I just hadn't played that game. And considering Metroid, I don't think I would have been able to beat it as a kid. Like it's an open game. Like it's pretty tough, right?
Yeah, I played it for a few, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm gonna go play something else.
I rented it as a kid, and I hated it.
Yeah, same here. I'll go play Simon's Quest instead because that's much more straightforward.
Well, you know what? You probably just. Just live the whip. So, yeah. Gooch, you got anything else? Dustin, any others jump in your head?
No.
Well, cool. Well, guys, this is where we need to make a small little announcement. We're going to get into a big-time Mass Effect 3 spoiler session, right? Starting right now? Sounds about good. And Gooch has a lot to talk about, and Dustin and I have not played Mass Effect, so we're going to ask him a lot of questions about the whole thing. So if you don't want any parts of Mass Effect 3 or the entire series spoiled, stop listening right now for almost the rest of the episode, because we don't have any mail to go over this week, right?
Yeah.
So, all right, well, we're going to play a quick little break and then be right back to talk about Mass Effect 3.
Yo, yo, it's your boy Richie Branson, the evil villainous bastard, and you're listening to the Classic League Podcast. Let's go.
All right, and we're back. Gooch, are you ready to spoil and rant about Mass Effect 3?
Most certainly.
All right. So, killer ending, right?
The ending can suck my balls. That's it. That's really it. I hate to be that way. Yeah, it's bad.
No, why? Okay. We're in spoiler session, so who cares? Why is it that you are so let down about it?
Well, mainly because I played Mass Effect through, 1, 2, and 3.
Yes.
And while I did play 1 on a different platform, I still have big decisions from Part 2. And then all of my decisions in 3 that should carry through to the ending, and really the ending, all that crap I did, the 100-plus hours boils down to 3 decisions that have very little to do with the actual decisions I made. Like, it's just, oh, well, you did all that other crap, and that was fantastic, but pick 1, 2, or 3. You open the door, boom, it's over, ending, here you go. It's just, it's super frustrating. Super frustrating.
So even knowing that you were going to be left with a hollow feeling, it was even more hollow than you thought it would be?
Yes. Yes. It's like, okay, here's the analogy I can give you right now. Like, I just came up with this, and this is terrible. It is like knowing you're going to get laid, but knowing that it's not going to be very good, right? You're like, I'm going to get laid, but I know this is going to be a really bad lay, but that's still a lay, right? That's okay. And then you turn the lights on and find out it's a dude.
What?
And you're not into dudes.
It cannot be that bad.
You're not into dudes. No, the game is not that bad. The ending.
Just the ending. Is that disappointing?
Yeah, it's like it might as well have been a Rickroll. You might as well have played 40 hours, and the minute you make that final decision, you just start hearing that. Never going to give you up.
You really feel like you got Rickrolled?
I do.
By BioWare?
I do.
Okay, well then, okay. So, okay. What's one of the decisions or whatever that you were happy that you made, or like, I don't know, that you carried with you that was like a really important decision that didn't mean anything?
Every goddamn one.
No, but there has to be at least like one or like one character's relationship, or you can't remember all your decisions.
No, not at all. But throughout, like, let me set it up, kind of rant for a bit. The first game, it starts off and you learn about the Reapers, this crazy super robots from outer space that are going to take over the galaxy, and it takes all of your might to defeat one, okay? And in that, you were learning about the universe, and you're learning about all these crazy conflicts and history and backstory, and it's not a nice place, right?
Okay.
Part 2 comes out, and it kind of picks up off that. You learn more about the Reapers and what they're doing. There's a big twist to find out that this ancient civilization that you thought are, like, godlike, they are, thousands and thousands of years old, 50,000-plus years ago.
The Prothean character?
Yeah, the Protheans, okay. Right? These guys who invented all this crazy technology, or so you thought, turn out to be the bad guys in this one, in part 2, because they had been turned by the Reapers into zombie-like collectors who pretty much snatch people up and harvest them to make more robots, all right? That was the big revelation. But along the way, you are you're digging a lot deeper into those individual conflicts and issues you learned about in the first game. So, like, okay, for example, there is a There is a genophage that occurred to a particular race of characters in Mass Effect, all right? The Krogans. They were taken as a simple people, bred like mad, handed a bunch of space weapons, even though they were super primitive and not ready for that kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, okay, you guys start humping like crazy. Here's some guns. Go win a war for us. What happened was it got out of hand. And like rabbits, they just multiplied like crazy, and they became a force to be reckoned with. They had to be squashed, you know? And so what they did was they essentially...
I love video game logic. So naturally, you just got to kill the race.
you have to kill the race, but they didn't want to kill the race because that's cruel. So they set it up. They put out this genophage, this virus, this thing that pretty much makes all of their births stillbirths. All the guys, they're plenty potent, but all their women can't have babies for nothing.
Okay.
Super tragic, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's an example of one conflict. In the third game, you resolve that conflict. You flat out have a decision whether you want to cure the genophage and allow these people to procreate like they once were, because they can procreate, but you're talking like for every, you know, 30 births, they might get one kid. And now you can totally wipe that slate clean, allow the guy who put that, you know, horrible change into place, give him redemption. He can sacrifice himself and make it all good. Okay, fantastic. And tons of things like that. Like you get to decide between an AI faction that was created by one race and the race that created them. So they create AI beings that revolt against them. Neither side is really the good guy there, but you can decide to wipe out that AI faction or let them live and be sentient on their own. All kinds of crazy stuff. All these big decisions that you're pretty much finalizing in Mass Effect 3 are supposed to build war efforts. Like, you know, you allow those Krogan guys to start humping and having babies, you get more warriors on your side for that final battle. You allow that AI race to live. I mean, don't, you know, shut them all off or send a virus their way. That's more people for your final battle. And ultimately, all that stuff doesn't matter.
Like, why? Okay, so what are the three options? Like, why doesn't it matter?
Okay, well, at the end of the game, you're presented with three options, and it is either, I'm trying to remember this right, one, you can kill the Reapers, flat out kill them, but I believe it also kills all other AI life in the galaxy. So that includes one of your, you know, closest crew members that you were friends with.
Buddy Garrus or whatever, right?
Not Garrus. He's not a robot, even though he looks like one.
Okay. Which one? Because I know some of these characters, like their faces and stuff. What's a character that would die from this?
Edie. She is your hot, super robot space chick who's on your crew. Really great character. I really liked her in the game. She was into, but actually took a physical form in part 3. You would kill her. You would kill that entire Geth race that I talked about saving earlier. Like, they would just be wiped out. You know, millions upon millions of these, you know, beings that, you know, that they're alive would just die. But so would all the Reapers. All right? You can, and that's one choice. Another choice is to actually take control of the Reapers. So you don't kill them.
You indoctrinate them, right?
Somewhat. And that, I don't know if that's entirely accurate, but you find out, like, there's a force that is controlling the Reapers, or so you think. And you can actually take control of them, which is actually what one of the quote-unquote evil protagonists in the game wants to do. He wants to take control of the Reapers and use them to benefit humanity by pretty much making, you know, humanity unstoppable. Humans control this crazy, you know, ass-kicking force in the universe, so don't mess with the humans. And then you can take that technology and apply it to humans and make them even better. You know, complete human supremacist in outer space. So complete dick move if you want to do that as well. But it also, it kills you in the process. You die by taking control of the Reapers. Not sure how that happens, but you die. And your third choice is actually to kill yourself again, sacrifice your being. And this, and I don't know how, this doesn't even make sense, but it would combine all inorganic and organic life in the galaxy into some sort of combination of a life form. So everything that is inorganic and organic, poof, now you're both. Because according to the logic that this effing game throws at you, the Reapers have to come through because it is a cycle, because eventually humans get to a point where they create AI, and AI takes over the humans, and they start destroying crap and wars and blah, blah, blah. So the Reapers are supposed to come in and wipe out all civilized life. Everyone who is not living in caves and scratching their butts with twigs has to be killed and destroyed, harvested, and then 50,000 years, the Reapers come back, rinse and repeat. It's terrible logic. Like, why? Why does that have to be that way? They're just like, this is how it has to be. Sorry, there's nothing you can do. Oh, of course I have to listen to you because you're a little boy and like a ghost who told me you're a robot now. Did you guys?
BioWare watch The Matrix, that's why.
Yeah, like, what the hell, man? Really?
Yeah, that does suck. If it comes down to those broad choices, what difference does it really make if you have people that are helping you in a battle or not? Because you're just choosing three doors, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like none of those really make sense. Like in a game that's all about choices and giving you tons and tons of options, why does it boil down to you have to pick one, two, or three, and there's no other way around it? All of my choices up to that point didn't really matter, and those choices didn't really make sense. Like, there is no good ending after that, even the fact. Like, you don't get to watch people rejoice and celebrate that you won the battle. It is just, here is a no-win situation. F you.
Yeah. What I guess if you were, what's an ending that you would have hoped for? Like, kind of describe your scenario a little bit. Like, are you a good shepherd or a bad shepherd?
I'm a good shepherd.
Okay, and then, like, what, you know, what's an ending that you wanted? Like, describe, like, what could have brought you maybe a little bit of closure? Like, not even comparing, like, at all what happened with the real ending. Just, how would you have wanted to see it changed? Or what would you have wanted to have happen with your story?
Well, I expect, like, to have some sort of better reveal at the end or whatever have you. And then just kill the Reapers. Like, why did it have to come down to the very end and say, oh, well, they're not exactly evil. They're being controlled by someone else. And I'm like, even though I talked to two of them and they both talked really evil-like and said they want to wipe out all humanity, that's not them talking. So it's okay now. I just want to kill them. I want them to die. I want me to win and get laid and people to celebrate and cheer and yay, it's all over. And give me that sort of like follow-up. I want a screen that pops up and it's like, here's what Garrus did 2 years later. Here's what Tally did 2 years later. You know, these two people went on to get married and, you know.
Do you think that since there's going to be that major disconnect of people now having to kind of get this after the fact that it just will be really, really a hollow sort of bit of content?
Yeah, it just doesn't fit. And I'm not like saying I'm entitled to some other ending or I can't appreciate the fact that they did have a no-win situation, because that's totally fine. It's war and that's how it works. But it just, I don't know. Like, it seems like a cop-out. And if they put a real ending or an epilogue behind some sort of DLC paywall, I'm going to be pissed.
Well, the DLC is going to be free.
Yeah, I hope. I hope it's, I guess I'm thinking this will resolve some stuff, but I don't want more DLC down the line after that. That, you know, like, I don't want to get half my answers and then have to pay for the rest or something like that.
Well, what's what's one of your plot points, like, specifically that you would want, like, some resolution on? Like, if you had to get, like, a character that you were, like, the closest with.
I don't know. Like, that sounds terrible.
Is it really hard to pick? I mean, is it really that good, like that engrossing of a game, or
all of the characters?
Is it not
that
good of a question?
No, it's a fun question. I liked all the characters. I think they're all fantastic. All the ones that kept around for the third game had good backstories. And the thing is, you get to talk to them all before the final mission, and that's pretty much it. Like, that's all you get. Like, you get them saying stuff like, Shepard, you're the man, and thank you for doing this for me, and that's it. And then you go do the final mission, and after that point, I mean, there's a certain point in the game where you are not with your party at all. Like, you are doing stuff on your own, and when the game ends, you see, like, two or three of your characters. I'll say it like this. Here's what happens on the good ending, all right? Shepard, you do something, you most likely die, or you think you die in any case, and then the cutscene kicks in and either Reapers are exploding or they're just falling out of the sky, whatever. And then it shows the Normandy, your spaceship trying to escape one of the mass relays exploding. Because no matter what you do, these mass relays that pretty much create wormholes in space that allow everyone to travel around the galaxy no matter what you pick on your ending, they all explode. I'm not sure why that has to be, but they all do. And in the Normandy, your ship with your crew is escaping one of those explosions, and then it just crashes on an alien planet, or it explodes.
Yeah.
So, all of a sudden at the end, on the good ending, they landed, and they walk out on some, like, forest-covered, crazy-looking planet out of Land of the Lost, and that is it. There is no dialogue, there is no context for why they're there or what's going to happen. That is it. And, I mean, and what sucks is it's the people who walk out of the spaceship are the two people you took on your final mission before the final mission, and then your pilot who has brittle bone disease. What good will he be? He will trip on a rock and hemorrhage and die.
Well, then you'll have to worry about him.
I know, but that's Seth Green's character, and he's a lot of fun. So he had to, of course, be in the end. Yeah.
It's the force moon of Endor, and they'll all eventually be killed and eaten by Ewoks anyway. So
I can only hope. But I don't know. Maybe I'm bitching too much. I guess I'm just really upset that everything I did in the first, you know, throughout three games was great. You know, super great story, fantastic, you know, world and universe that BioWare has created, and then it just kind of slams a truck right into you in the very end, and just and makes it all seem meaningless. Now, I do know you guys watch the indoctrination theory videos.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that all sounds fantastic. Like, I am totally on board with this indoctrination theory, because it would at least explain why throughout the game you were seeing ghosts. Like, you were seeing a ghost of a child over and over and over again, and then all of a sudden that ghost of the child, you know, is at the end of the game acting like he is the robot god of space, telling you you have to make these three decisions, and you can't dispute the fact whatsoever at all. And I would love to find out that it was all in your head or something. Like, I just want something to kind of break that up, because there is nothing like that in the other two games or in the entire rest of Mass Effect 3. There are no ghosts, no paranormal crap, no, just nothing. Like, I don't get why that's there. It's out of nowhere.
Well, you should watch the indoctrination stuff, because I'd love to get your thoughts on it.
I watched a couple at work today where they were talking about the, I mean, they were really nitpicking, like,
well, that's why you're working 15-hour days.
Well, I was
you're
on
not
my
doing any work.
Lunch break, I swear. But no, yeah, they were talking about, like, oh, you hear this crazy sound, and that's from the books, and that, you know, is indicative of this characteristic of being indoctrinated. And being indoctrinated also means that you sometimes have these crazy visions and see things and hear voices, which is cool. Like, I get that. That's great. If that was their spin on it, I'm indoctrinated, great. But just don't stop it right there. Like, it's just, psh. And the thing is, if you don't die in the ending, which we're assuming that Shepard's alive in this other ending, either you evaporate and you're gone, or you see, like, his armor, like his chest, sort of like taking a breath. And it's like, and it cuts off. Have you seen that part?
No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like that's it.
If you get the red explosion?
Yeah. And that's real confusing, because it's like, well, blue is supposed to be Paragon, but you have a vision of a bad guy making that decision. Red should be Renegade, evil, but you see a good guy making that decision. But none of them are a good decision. You know, it's, I keep these things alive, and we could be giant dicks. They could turn on us. Who knows what could happen? I kill all artificial life in the galaxy, or through space magic, everyone just has computer human sex, and now you're all one. Ah, man. I'm not making any sense, guys. I'm sorry.
Sorry, dude. I'm disappointed for you. It's crazy that the, you were one of the people that had the ending wrecked. It just wasn't good enough.
I know. But it's a great game, though. It's like, it's a lot of fun all the way throughout. It's so much more streamlined than even 2 was. It's like a big, big combat focus. And I mean big combat focus at the end of the game. It pretty much looks like third-person Call of Duty at the end. Because it's just like you're in London, and it's like this gritty city street, and it just throws wave after wave of enemies at you, and you're talking to guys in like camo gear. It just totally feels out of place. Like, I just don't get the last like 2 or 3 hours of this game. And sucks because part two has to be, I mean, and seriously, like, probably in my top 10 favorite games of all time and easily one of the very best games of this console generation. I mean, phenomenal ending.
I'm the only one that says that.
Yeah, like, it's just, the way they wrap up part two is just phenomenal. Despite the fact you're fighting some kind of crazy Terminator monster at the end, I can totally forget that because all of your decisions, like, have weight at the very end of the game, and it was done so well. And the fact that, you know, all these, you know, friendships and bonds you form with your crew pretty much decided who lived or died at the very end. And that was fantastic.
It sucks that that sense of involvement was stripped out.
Yeah.
Final one.
But, I mean, I don't know. I'm really kind of speechless. And I might calm down. I mean, I'm not like going to write angry letters to BioWare, stop buying their games. But I'm just really disappointed. I mean, like, they led this thing up, you know, and this is like, you know, what could have been one of my favorite game series of all time, but now it's just kind of, it ends on a real sour note.
Yeah, that sucks. Well, you don't have to play it anymore.
That's right.
You are done. Say screw with the DLC. You already know that you're not going to be happy with it, so just don't even bother.
That's right. I'm seriously, honestly thinking about trading it in. I just, I don't want to be whiny. I don't want to be that guy that's like, well, psh, blah, 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 blah. I got my money's worth, 30 some odd hours, but I'm never going to pick it up again. Knowing the fact that no matter what I do, it's going to boil down to those three choices. And, you know, like, why did I put 30 some odd hours in this game building up all these resources?
Part of me does think it's kind of funny that happened. That, not to you specifically, but just like to games, like.
I want DB to beat it. I want this man who has read all of the Mass Effect novels, who buys the DLC that I didn't buy, is so concerned about his Shepard that he won't play if it doesn't look right. I want this man to beat the game, and I want him to call me when he's in tears.
Yeah, and I want you to hit record on Pamela Bick. Oh, dude, my cell phone's broken. Call me on Skype.
Yeah. He hasn't beaten it, though. I texted him earlier today, and I said, F the ending. And he said, why? And I said, because it's just not what I... It's just, you know, everything I've said here, it's bad.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm totally cool. Like, I'm down with whatever they want to do. It's their series. I'm not here to tell them how to make the end of the game go. You know, and I understand, you know, it should... You know, be confined to a certain point because, you know, you want, you know, if you want to continue the game through any sort of narrative, it can't be totally wide open.
Yeah.
But, damn it, man.
More than three.
Yeah, or just something better. Like, you know, give me those three choices or a different...
And then maybe just a couple tree, like a decision tree might have been a little more helpful there for you.
Yeah.
It would have boiled down to actually really only being like five or six choices, but it might have felt like a lot bigger just because there was more of an onion feel or layers to it.
I know. And the thing is, like, leading up to, like, the last, like, 10 minutes, like, there's a really great, like, half hour, hour of gameplay and dialogue. They just could have cut it off right there. It could have stopped.
So is it like the last 20 seconds thing? Is that what, are you on board with Rooster? Are you?
Sort of, yeah. Like, well, it depends on what he's calling the last 20 seconds. Is he calling the last 20 seconds that point where that ship explodes or lands on some crazy-ass alien planet. Yeah, that's really weird. I have a problem with the three decisions and that ghost kid talking to you and, you know, saying, you got to do this and that. And your guy, who throughout the entire game is like, I don't take shit from anyone, and I do what I want to do, and I'm Commander Shepard, and suck it. And he just listens to this ghost, and he's like, oh, really? That's what I got to do? He doesn't stop and say, well, that doesn't make sense, or... He's just like, well, I guess I better go over here and die because this little kid said I had to.
Yeah, I can see that. That sucks. Well, you won't play it again, so I guess we're done with Mass Effect. Yeah, Dustin, man, I don't see any other reasons for us to talk about it. We might not get to talk about Mass Effect anymore, man.
I think we can bring it up somehow.
Yeah, maybe. Eventually, like
if,
we can.
If there's any other games in the future that blow at the ending, then we can say that they were Mass Effected.
Yes, there we go.
Mass Effected.
Perfect. So, all right. Well, I guess that pretty much ends the show this week. There was one thing that I wanted to mention after we give a couple of partner shout-outs. It's something I saw from a Nintendo legend on Twitter. So just a quick shout-out again to Doghouse Systems, Hapog, and AverMedia. Our games that you see us review are sponsored by GamersGate.com, J2Games.com, and Gamer here in Findlay, Ohio. You can check us out at J2PO.com, soon to be back at GlitchedOut.com, Got Game, GameFire, ReviewZone HD, and the Yaush forums. Yeah, guys, so when I was trying to think about what kind of song I wanted to outro the episode with, I ended up deciding on, of course, a chiptune cover of a song. And I don't know, maybe about 2 weeks ago, I was looking at my girlfriend and I made a comment to her. I said, I think that I have a guilty pleasure towards dubstep music because I grew up playing Nintendo games. And she's like, what? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, well, the song structure is really different. You know, like last week in the interview, we were talking with Bill. Just games are written in a different manner. They're not necessarily made to have a chorus, you know, bridge, verse, that kind of stuff. And I think that we're just maybe used to songs or noises that have that kind of bonk or wonk sound to it. And then immediately going into something that's like really like light and harmonic because you just go in from like a dungeon to outside. And so she was kind of like, yeah, I can see that or whatever. I have theories all the time that she's not buying, so this was just one of them. I kid you not, like 24 hours later, maybe 2 days later, I see Nintendo Legend on Twitter say something along those lines, like, I think I like dubstep because of retro games. So I felt like totally validated by this, and a few responses that Nintendo Legend got were like people asking for examples and stuff like that, and I knew what he was saying. I couldn't think of any, like, good examples, but I think that maybe I have a song to play for you guys now. It's actually an 8-bit cover of some dubstep, and sometimes I love dubstep. Sometimes it's, like, way too annoying. This is a good example of me preferring the chiptune version of kind of the wobbity-wobs that happen versus, like, what's in the real song. It's a cover of a Skrillex song called Cinema. He like won a Grammy for this song and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, it's a catchy song. Like, don't get me wrong, but listen to the chiptune version. It was by I'll post who it's by. It was from someone I found on SoundCloud. I think it's called like Oxide or something like that. So anyways, I hope you guys enjoy this track and we will, see you next week for episode 88. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thanks a lot.